Welcome to the Motoring Podcast, your weekly discussion of motoring news. This is episode 573 on Tuesday, the 9th of April, 2024. Hello, I'm Alan.
Hello, I'm Andrew. And this week, we'll be looking at how predictive behaviour is jolly tricky. In new car news, we examine why a thing that was never going to happen is not happening. And in points of interest, we note that if you look at an eclipse, do it with protection. But first, we have some follow-up, two pieces of follow-up, actually. And I'm going to start with what's turning out to be our regular follow-up lately has been our regular follow-up contributor, and that is the Renault-Volvo Group joint venture.
It's not even me who puts this in every week, by the way, but I do genuinely think it's interesting.
This one is. Now, they announced the name of this joint venture, which is Flexis, and they've put some more details on through a couple of press conferences where people got to sit down and ask them some questions. And essentially, they are looking at creating electric vans for last mile delivery type stuff or in cities or urban areas. Mm-hmm. This is actually a good target for them because of the constraints at the moment of the technology and what generally people need vans to do. Holding it in constrained environments is better.
It's not just that, though, really, is it? Because Renault, as part of the stuff that it's unveiled before, has shown small city vehicles and sort of last mile delivery stuff and pizza delivery type stuff at one end. Not that anyone would do that, because of course they'd all use like Uber and Lyft and all these terrible apps. They've got that at the tiny side. And of course, Volvo has all the inter-country, inter-regional, and intra-hub type stuff covered in electric, hydrogen, diesel, compressed natural gas. You name your powertrain, you can bet that they can provide a truck that will run on it. And so they've got all of that at the other end for all of the larger distribution needs. Mm. This is really filling that gap between what Renault kind of have, EV-wise and delivery-wise, and what Volvo has. This is kind of slotting into the middle to be able to show, to give a whole from, what is it they say in, from wheat to bread is the Swedish saying. So from soup to nuts, which I think is the French one. It covers the whole gamut of delivery from, yeah, sure, we've got however many hundred pallets that we need to move, right, the way, or trolleys that we need to move right the way down to, here is your pizza, monsieur, type of thing.
Yep. I like this a lot because they are also partnering with a freight firm from France called CMA CGM. That's, they're taking a 10% stake because Volvo and Renault are taking 45% each.
It's one of CMA CGM. I'd never realized that they were actually French. You see them on the side of containers and stuff all around the world. It's one of those big French companies which you don't realize is French. It's the French companies are great at being all anti-globalization, and then they all do it by stealth.
But what they're also doing is they are discussing with end users. So they're trying to get their product to be the most efficient it can be for people who are doing deliveries, say. They are looking at everything from getting in the cab, getting out, getting the parcel, parking up, all aspects of it. And they are even talking about how software is going to help them with their delivery routes. Good luck with the GDPR and the security on that side of things if you're working with big companies.
Yeah, it's not so bad. It's like making sure there's more right turns and left turns and that kind of stuff. What I also like is that they're talking about exploiting economies of scale within Renault Group as much as possible. So stuff like the vans will share the batteries with the Alpine's performance EVs. That helps Alpine's performance EVs as much as it helps Renault's vans, if not more so.
Well, that's the stuff we were giving Nissan a kicking for last week.
Exactly. It's exactly the stuff we were giving Renault partner Nissan a kicking for last week. Yes. It just makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, this is good. I'm interested to see where this goes because it appears to have been thought through. And is not just we need to make a splashy headline.
French and Swedish, mate, everything will have been thought through. The impressive thing is that the thinking seems to have ended and they're actually doing. That's the harder part with working with both of those nationalities.
I look forward to your future employment, Alan. Right. Do you want to take us to Toyota then?
Normally I say yes. Toyota, we've talked before about challenges with or issues with Toyota's CAN bus networks and the ability to remove some of the bumper in some cars and a bit of a headlamp, plug in an emergency start module and start and unlock the car and drive it away. That's not good.
No.
I think that we've sort of made that point.
Over a year ago, we made that point.
Oh, well, over a year.
For the people who are catching up.
Yeah. If you have a number of Toyota vehicles, specifically RAV4 hybrids, Lexus RXs, and Lexus NXs, all of which are hybrid, then you should really contact your local dealer to have a pair of steel plates installed somewhere in the front of the car. That should make it harder for people to get to the actual plug. This is not an ideal situation. I think you'll agree, Andrew, that a steel plate, it would actually be much better to do some form of software update to disable that ability in the first place.
Yes.
Rather than just covering it up with a steel plate. But that is what is being proposed. If you are concerned about that, then do get in touch with your dealer and they should be able to fit these free of charge. Oh, hang on. Costs are under review. Consumers may incur a nominal charge.
I am seriously unimpressed by that statement.
That's a very unimpressive statement, yes.
It's, for a company such as Toyota, I was incredibly surprised when I read that.
Yeah, that's kind of unlike Toyota, really. So I would go along, raise merry hell, and demand that they fix it by fitting the darn things. And no, you won't be paying a nominal charge. Ken Tyndall has made a post of Canis Automotive Labs has made a post on LinkedIn talking about this because he and also other friend of the show, Ian Table, had reverse engineered that after Ian's RAV was stolen twice.
Attacked twice and stolen once.
Yeah. And he's discussed that despite their findings and their understanding of the attack, nobody from Toyota actually got in touch to talk about it, despite Ken having been offered help to them. I think the point that he makes at the very end is the last sentence of his little post on LinkedIn is, I think there are obviously some lessons to be learned from this episode and hope that in future it becomes easier for security researchers and car makers to engage productively, since everyone wants the same thing, to stop thieves from stealing cars. Security should be baked in to any form of network, not just tacked on at the end in the form of steel plate.
Come on, car industry, let's get better at this.
Yeah, and that's not Toyota specific, really.
That is not Toyota specific,
but that's all of them who are doing, if not physically the same thing, metaphorically the same thing.
Yes. Okay, new news, and it's the start of the month, Alan.
It is. Oh, I get two in a row for a change. Lucky me. It is the start of the month. We just missed the new car registrations last week. They have risen 10.4% since 2019, so over the past 5 years, really, there's not been a lot of rise. It is mostly sort of potted along. 317,786 new registrations, obviously up on 2023, but still nothing compared to the over 450,000 from March 2019. Again, private buyers way down. Down another 7%. Business, down another 8%. Fleet, however, up 29.6%. Fleet is really what is supporting British car buying right at the moment.
Without fleet, this would be abysmal.
Yeah.
And that, to be fair, is actually worrying SMMT, and they are once again putting the call out to halve VAT, to basically subsidise and encourage private purchases to take advantage of the incentives that also car manufacturers are making at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. The trouble is, as soon as you do that kind of stuff on new cars, you then immediately hit the values of used cars as well.
Yeah.
There's many reasons not to do that, and that's not a very good tactic, because you hurt not just other private buyers, you're also who makes it harder for them to buy a new car in 3 years' time, but you're also hurting your fleet buyers and everyone who have already factored in a unexpected depreciation costs and all these kind of things. And that's one of the main reasons many companies are turning from some of the EV brands.
Yeah.
Because they keep randomly changing their prices.
Yeah, yeah. Can't run a business like that. If you are reliant on a fixed figure, you cannot run a business like that. Obviously, the car companies feel they can.
Well, their fixed figures are down the line. They're just wiggling the one at the end. However, yeah. Then the fleet managers, be it for a rental company, be it for Motability, be it for any of these organizations, they need stuff to remain roughly stable or at least predictable.
Yep.
Because their entire business lives and dies by the spreadsheet, to be perfectly frank. Just a quick note on that, though, and on alternative fuels. The Tristan Young's fuel you put in the car breakdown takes it at basically petrol has a 69-70% market share.
Mm-hmm.
Battery electric vehicles, 15.5%. Diesel, just under 7%. And a plug-in hybrid, just approaching 8%. So despite lots of plug-in hybrid harping coming from this side of the Atlantic, as opposed to the British side of the Atlantic, right at the moment, doesn't really seem to be reflected in registration/sales within the UK yet anyway.
No, they are increasing. That's up over 2%. So from that point of view, it's up over 10,000 registrations as well.
That's quite
a jump. But you're seeing some real lunatic comments about how evil plug-in hybrids are and how they're actually all this sort of stuff. It's become very bizarre.
There are real lunatic comments on both sides.
Yeah,
and I think really, that just like so many other political factions, the loonies at the extremes are just of both are just causing all sorts of FUD.
Yeah.
And then don't even get started on some of the UK's right-wing press motoring coverage, not by motoring correspondents, about EVs and all sorts of stuff. Just some absolute tripe being created.
Yeah, it's not fun at the
shocking.
Moment. It is not fun to be trying to find articles or find the truth or get to... And this is from us two who are really in this, who are invested in it, are very interested and want to know and know things. I feel so sorry for such a random person who wants to buy an car and is trying to find some facts.
Yeah, because I blooming well hope they're not getting in from columnists and Daily Telegraph. And then you've got the Daily Telegraph, motoring team. We're perfectly normal, sensible people like ourselves who understand the differences and can do all of this stuff and talk about it. And then you get these bat poo idiots just spouting.
Yeah, yeah.
It's horrible. It's really nasty. Anyway, let's move on to the top models. Actually, I've noticed. Have you noticed that? They've changed the flipping title. Finally.
Yes.
After all these years,
we
it says top models, not best sellers.
Influence, Alan. We have influence. I am going to thank them publicly on social media.
If you could. They have changed the heading of the top 10 list.
Yes. So it no longer says top sellers.
I'm sure. Oh, bestsellers. That's what it said.
Yeah,
bestsellers. Wow, all the years we've been doing this.
Only took 8.5.
I'm quite terrified that was us, but there we go.
I do know they listen.
Yeah, I know. I know, that's the scary bit.
So anyway, what are the top models, Alan?
I know, you're so excited. MGHS 5,460 is in at number 10 there. Tesla Model Y, 5,602. 8th, Volkswagen Golf. 7, Mercedes-Benz A-Class. 6, the Vauxhall Corsa. Quite far down the listing. We break through the 6,000 mark with the Audi A3 at number 5 in 6,010. Number 4, the Nissan Juke. 7,346, a significant step between 5 and 4 there.
Mm.
Kia Sportage, 7,445. Second, the Ford Puma, 8,318. And at number 1, the all-British Nissan Qashqai, 8,931 registration.
Mm.
Year-to-date, by the way, Ford Puma still leads the Qashqai, leads the Sportage, leads the Juke, but it's the same top 4. In fact, it's the same top 5, because the Audi A3, again, a step behind in both of those.
Mm-hmm. Should we do the spreadsheet of doom fairly quickly?
Oh, if we must.
Okay, well, I'll run down through the dooms, and we'll start with Bentley down 41%. DS is down 45%. Now, last year they registered 337, this year only 184. Ford is down 17%. This one is quite a drop, actually. 20,415 in 2023 to 17,026 this year.
Are there supply issues?
No.
That seems very strange. Sorry, it just seems unusual and for it to be that much.
But I imagine they do a lot of privates. And if private registrations are dropping, because think of all the Fiestas and Focuses they used to do.
Yeah.
Is that slack being picked up by the Puma? Possibly not.
I would have expected so. Anyway, it might be being picked up by the Tucson Sportage.
Yeah. Genesis is down 20%. Maserati is down 54%. Maxus is down 67%. That was 3 last year and 1 this year.
Yes, exactly. This is not exactly lies and statistics on that one. Yeah.
Yes, there are times we do have to quantify. Polestar is down 50%. Porsche is down 15%. And finally, Tesla is down 33%. Now, that's more bad news on top of the poor quarter they had as it came to deliveries. But
I think it was boat timings last year.
You say that. I think that is evened out a lot more now because they have more production.
Oh, it has. There are not the spikes and troughs that Tesla always had. But, you know, it's depending on your world view, you may see it as a bit of a poisoned badge these days.
That might be making an effect. Go on, cheer us up then.
Okay, lots of green, I'm afraid. So it's going to be me for the next couple of minutes. Abarth up 146%. Alpine up 83%. 90 cars registered last month in the UK. I think that's pretty good, actually. BMW up 39%. Even stronger than last month. BYD wins the MG award for ridiculous percentages. With a 2,132.35% rise, 759 vehicles registered instead of 34. This is where the private buyers will be going. Cupra up 35%, Dacia up 22%, GWM Aura up 65%, Honda up 66%, Jaguar up 141%. So Jaguar have gone from just under 2,000 registrations to 2,700-ish registrations, which is pretty impressive.
4,600.
That's what I said.
Well, 2,000.
Oh, did I? Pardon me. I meant to say 4,700. It's 4,690. I was too busy on the rounding. Jeep up 250%, Lexus up 90%, Mercedes-Benz up 20%, Nissan up 21% as well. Peugeot up 37%, Renault up 132%, Seat up 24%, Skoda up 33%. Smart up from 42 to 306, so 628.57%. Subaru up 44%, must be all the new Crosstrek.
Well, that's like the third or fourth month on the trot they've been up.
I know. It's longer than that. It's been quite a while. They've actually started pushing some cars and trying to sell some cars. For the first time in many years. I've always said that they can only support one brand at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So either Subaru's on the ascendancy or Isuzu's on the ascendancy, but it's never both. Don't know if this means that Isuzu's not doing so well in the pickup truck market. I mean, that's just me and my opinion based on observation rather than anything proper, I suppose. Vauxhall up 28%, Volvo up 33%, and other imports up 40%. Thank goodness we're through that.
Yes. Not good to see so much green. But to be fair, last year was low, so anything was a positive.
Well, headlights next, Andrew.
Yes. A investigation stroke campaign by the RAC have got in touch with MPs, and there is a petition that's gone to Parliament that said, can you please investigate the dazzling headlights? Because so many drivers are finding it painful in some cases, but just distracting and dangerous when driving at nighttime. There's a lot to be investigated here. because the Department for Transport has said that they need to find out the further evidence on this issue, and they want to know who is being affected, how they're being affected, and why they're being affected. Because is this things like misaligned headlights? Is this because it's people in lower cars and the SUV's headlights just happen to be in the back window? Is it a combination of things? Is it, you know, what is going on here that is happening?
Is it misaligned mirrors and people not knowing how to dim, dip the rearview mirror, all of that kind of stuff? There's quite a lot. If you read through this article in Automotive and Charlie Martin, which of course will be linked in the show notes, then there's quite a lot of talk. If you do read it, there is quite a lot of talk about misalignment. And my wonder is, are headlights coming correctly aligned from the factory? Is this actually a quality control issue at the last steps of manufacture, for example?
Mm. And also the auto-leveling ones, are they actually...
Auto-leveling?
Yes. Has that been calibrated properly?
Yeah, I suppose so.
Because that could be a problem.
I mean, there are some brands that people mention more than others. There was sort of an unofficial Twitter poll the other week.
Yeah.
And some brands were mentioned more than others as being particularly dazzling. Tangential anecdote, I note I might have been reading the rules for individual vehicle approval recently, as one does.
Yeah, you know. Naturally. It makes the long winter nights fly through, don't they, Alan?
And it's another wet night in Massachusetts. I might as well read the DVLA publications. One of the things that is curious to me was that actually American headlamps, as long as they're aligned correctly, are permissible in the UK because they're flat. They don't have a tick up at the other side.
Okay.
Whereas if it was a European left-hand drive headlamp with the tick up on the wrong side, you'd have to do something more severe to actually sort it because that cannot be corrected by alignment. There's your useless fact of the day.
It's going to be interesting to see what they find and from that what they decide to do, because this is quite a tightrope of we've improved how good headlights are so it is safer to drive at night when there are no other lights around, to a few people don't dim their mirror because they don't know what that little button on the back is all about, and therefore we all get penalized.
Similarly, are people actually dipping their headlamps or are they just idiots?
Yeah.
You know, it comes down to a load of those kinds of things. Similarly, if you've got one headlamp bulb out, the other one will glow brighter because, of course, all the current's going through it. And just not good. And if you don't repair that, then... Well, so many factors at play there, but
But it's good it's being looked into and investigated. Yes. So hopefully we'll get some proper answers from it. How soon? We do not know.
No, exactly.
Do you want to take us on to finding out that making automated car software is quite hard?
Hard things about software. Car makers have given up, according to Ars Technica, on software that avoids kangaroos. Australia is turning to virtual fences to cut down on car kangaroo impact. It turns out predicting what animals are going to do when they enter or are about to enter the roadway is hard.
Yes. Some are harder than others.
Well, I've heard stories of stuff like moose will literally jump out in front of the lights of a car and then run down the road, either away from you if you're lucky or towards you if you're not, because they're a bit too stupid.
Yeah, and that's before they get the bacteria that drills into the brain and sends them absolutely mad, frothing at the mouth mad.
Thanks. I'm glad there are none anywhere near here. Oh. It was the other week, driving up towards Vermont, when it was like, beware of the bears for the next 15 miles. It was like, meep.
This doesn't happen in the Highlands, I tell you.
I know. You can avoid a grouse. Yes. I'm a pheasant. I'm not really used to bears in the road. Yeah. No, didn't see any, by the way.
Yeah, the claim is, or the statement is, that the kangaroos are effectively irrational and there is no way that they can, that the technology can be created well enough to predict which way a kangaroo is going to jump, how it's going to jump, why it's going to jump, or any of these things. So they've just gone, nope, give up. We can't put the tech in. If we can't put the tech in cars. But this is what happens with all prediction, particularly if it's in software, because it is incredibly difficult to actually do that accurately.
But it's probability based.
Mm.
Probability problems being solved very, very quick. And if something is just basically a randomizer, then it's like a kangaroo. Just wait, they'll be appearing in casinos in Vegas before very long as a sort of random number generator, and you'll yes. have to bet on it.
Bounces up and down on a switch or something. But we'll round this out with talking about how Bentley has said that they are not going to offer level 3 self-driving vehicles because it's too dangerous. And I put a little post out on LinkedIn about how that sounds wonderful. And it really does sound like the car companies are looking out for us. However, they've gone on to say that they're going to offer a level 2++. It's hiding behind the semantics of the SAE levels to throw drivers and the rest of the people on the road under almost literal buses.
It's either one level or it's not a level. That's why there are levels. There's no point. You can't have your sort of level 2 and a bit more and a bit more and a bit more. Whilst getting away with it. You just, and that's it. It's something which annoys me in day job, at least as much as it does in this. And it's not the autonomous driving part of this that's annoying me. It's the fact that people are adding bonus levels in. The reason they're SEs, the reason it's the standard levels with their standard descriptions is because they're a standard. Your pluses, your plus pluses, and your 0.5s, they're not real. Stop it. Now, there endeth the lecture.
Yeah, it's just to effectively offer the same capabilities of the system, except, say, the human has to be watching at all times, but they can take their hands off the wheel, is just a failure. It's that already the system is failing.
Semantic boy here, then it's not the same capabilities.
I mean the driving capabilities, not the... the whole system capabilities.
It's not the same capabilities. As a matter of...
On the road...
I know what they're saying. I'm not trying to start you.
No, you're quite right to get this right. The road capabilities are effectively going to be the same. However, what is required of the driver and how that legally is then looked at is very different. And
the implementation of the capability.
Actually, the car industry needs to stop doing that.
Yeah, it's a bad habit, and it comes from many of the big five consultancies.
It's either going to take the industry to stop because the regulators suddenly spot this flaw, or someone who's incredibly wealthy taking a car company to court when there is an accident involving these and say, yeah, but you've given us a system we cannot actually succeed at.
Get buying those lottery tickets, Andrew.
Yes. Anyway, do you want to take us on to EV charging now?
Yes, there are a load of EV charger grants available in the UK, but there is now less than a year left for businesses, landlords, private households to claim a number of these grants. In the show notes, there will be a link to a story by evpowered.co.uk written by Matt Allen, which runs through and lists the different possible grants for all the places, and it subsequently has links to how you can find out more, how you can apply for each of these different grants.
Mm-hmm.
If you feel that you need or you're going to need these kind of things, any sort of charging infrastructure, go and take a look. There are grants for landlords, there are grants for people who rent or who own flats. There are grants for people with on-street parking. There are grants for companies if you have staff and fleets. And there are grants for schools as well, schools and universities, any state-funded education institution. Go, look, click, find out more, apply as soon as you can.
Yep, before the money runs out.
Yep, that was our big consumer segment for the week.
Yes. Well, I'm going to stick with EV charging and sort of batteries. And this is Rimac Energy, who have a base in Oxfordshire, part of Rimac Technology, part of the Rimac Group, who, of course, make the incredibly fast EVs. But this Rimac Energy are focused on energy storage. And so these are stationary battery storage solutions. And this, I think, is important. And because they're looking to add 70 new jobs to the expansion they've just done at their site in Oxfordshire. These systems, I think, are going to become increasingly more important as we move to a more electrified future. Because there's a number of things they can do. They can help reduce the pull on the national grid and the energy grid. You can also, because of them, the pull that you do take does not need to be as large as if you are just installing rapid chargers that need that power now, and there's no way to bank it up effectively and access as you're going along. Things like if you've got solar panels over the top of car parks, offices, factories, or even actual charging points themselves, they can use that, put that energy into something that, again, instead of pulling on the grid or reducing the pull on the grid, can be used there. I think this is a really interesting and exciting future there, because maybe it helps out on residential houses as well.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I see people who have sort of battery installs and solar. Often they've got battery installs, solar, and EVs because it's a sensible trio. And just showing that they can store up even when they're not there, and then that's used to charge the car and all these kind of things. It just makes a lot of sense. I think if I was in the fortunate position of building a new house these days, then I would, that would be one of the must haves that's on it, is that kind of setup with the battery banks. I think that's so smart. I also love whenever companies cover car parks in solar panels, because I think that's a massive twofer, because it also keeps your car either cool, or it keeps the snow and it keeps snow, rain, whatever else off it in the winter. And in both cases means that it takes less energy to get going.
Yeah. But recently there was a piece came out from Ofgem that was saying, oh, we want to further explore encouraging people to not use energy at times of peak demand, therefore showing they don't understand peak demand.
Yes.
But this is just such a, this is the sort of stuff that will help reduce, because they're basically saying that the grid isn't actually going to be able to cope after we've been told for years that it is.
Yeah.
They are actively going, oh, actually, hang on, this is a bit more of a problem than we anticipated. This is the sort of thing that can help reduce that. And it's there and it's available. So why are we not investing more in this?
Yeah, absolutely. On a similar note, just quickly, Osprey Charging, EV Rapid Charging Network, they have just passed 1,000 public EV chargers out there. So that's pretty good going. Congratulations.
Yep. More, please. More. Just keep going.
Yes, yes.
Everybody keep going. Okay, I'm going to round out the first part with good news, and that is that AR Online, the British car history site that was founded by Keith Adams back in 2001, has actually been bought by the Great British Car Journey Museum, and this will be kept going and live with Keith continuing to add content and look after things, but the back-end sort of stuff and all the effort that he was having to put in from that side of things has been removed from his plate, so he doesn't have to worry about that.
Yeah, well, becoming a bit of a challenge as the site became sort of more and more popular, really.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's great news. Good. So the trouble with the internet is that archives of stuff can just disappear. Anyway, I think that takes us into Guilt Minute. Quick break in the show where we ask for a tad of financial support to keep the lights on and the hosting running. If you feel the Motoring Podcast is worth a small consideration every month, then you can become a patron. Different levels of patron include different levels of commitment from us to you, including being able to watch the show recorded live. We also have a small range of merchandise in our Spring store, from stickers to mugs and t-shirts. If you don't have any spare cash and we completely understand, then you can help by following for free from a podcast player to receive every show as they're released, and by liking and rating the show in whatever way your podcast supplier lets you. If you've done all that and somebody do so, thank you very, very much. Then the last thing you can do is to recommend us to your friends or colleagues.
Yes, thank you everybody who does. Very much appreciated. Right, new car news, and I will start with the Renault Captur. Now, this is a B-class SUV, small SUV that is very similar sized to the Clio.
It is a jacked-up Clio, everyone.
But apparently, according to Renault, is at home in the city or off the grid.
Okay. Yes, well, So I came up the Route Napoleon a few years ago. Do you remember that? I did a trip up that in the GRMN, and I ended up behind, or at least trying to keep up with, a local and a Renault capture. So trust me, these are some of the fastest cars in the whole of France. Traditionally, it has been a Duke underneath. I don't know how true that still is in this case, but it and the Duke have shared a lot of platform stuff.
They've changed the styling outside, out front. It's got the sort of more...
more Peugeot-esque.
Renault-stroke Peugeot. Renault nose. They've tweaked the lights out the back as well. I think it looks smart.
It's always been a good-looking wee thing.
It's going to continue to be available in petrol or hybrid. The petrol with a 1-litre, 3-cylinder, 90-horsepower engine will start at 22,000, but then you can go and get...
Nobody cares about that. The only thing people care about is that the startup chime has been composed by Jean-Michel Jarre. That is all you need to know about the Renault Captur. Yeah. Hybrid petrol, whatever, different things. Yeah. No, Jean-Michel Jarre, everyone. I really hope it sort of goes right round you. So super wide spatial.
Okay, then, do you want to take us to Vauxhall and the Mokka?
On the competing platform, Vauxhall is unveiling a special edition Mokka electric Griffin, which is £7,000 cheaper than the normal car.
And I think we have to bring back our question that we used with the Corsa that was all equally price slashed.
Yes.
Particularly when you look at the specs and you're like, how are they doing this?
Yes. There doesn't seem to be anything really removed from the base design trim, it seems. Yes, nobody can really work out just how they have managed to magically slash £7,000. And also, whilst it's limited edition Vauxhall, it won't confirm how limited. So it's not as if there's a certain number of these right at the minute. The order book opens on the 17th of April and you should receive your car some point in June, if that floats your boat. I think it's a good looking little car.
Yeah, just to note though that it's the 50 kilowatt hour lithium ion pack that the Corsa's also got, which has an estimated 209 mile range as opposed to the 252 miles, which is claimed by the Mokka Electric Long Range. So imaginatively titled.
Yes. Well, it's exactly what it says on the tin, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's going to actually be 29,495.
Sorry, did I not actually say that? Did I?
No,
say
we
just about every figure apart from that. I'm yes. Still thinking about Jean-Michel Jarre, to be honest.
I know. No mention of that in the Mokka.
No. I don't know who they'd have to do it in the
Tubular
Mokka.
Bells.
Yes, it would have to be Mike Oldfield, wouldn't it? It's the only British equivalent. Anyway, tell us about the last Smart 4.2, Andrew.
Yep, the last Smart 4.2 has rolled off the production line in Hambach. The production has finished after more than 25 years. Now, who was going to buy this factory? Because there was a lot of talk, wasn't there?
Oh, it was very British. This was where the British joke was trying to come in. The factory has been bought by Ineos.
Oh, is this the Ineos one?
Yes, the incredibly British Ineos Grenadier.
Yeah.
You know, the German-engineered car built in the factory in France. Yes, is built there, and I'm sure the second line will be for the smaller one, which also has some kind of British military name, but I can't be bothered to even learn what it is at the minute.
All future Smarts are going to be built by Geely, and they are looking, I noticed in an article today that just before we came to record this show, so I haven't got a link in the show notes, but Smart are talking openly about trying to partner up with another company to develop the future platforms for Smarts.
I understand why they have to be built somewhere where labor is cheaper, to be honest, because as we'll find out in the next story, it's all about a small car. It doesn't really bring you any, it brings in less profit than big cars because they cost almost the same to build.
Yeah. So talking of which, do you want to take us on to the thing that was never going to happen? And now we have a thread that explains exactly why it was never going to happen.
Is going to happen, might never happen, could happen, robo-taxi, blah. I don't know.
Oh, God.
There's an excellent thread by Chris Miller on X/Twitter. Jitter, if you wish. talking about a Model 2 and how the $25,000 Model 2 just couldn't really ever have happened, no matter who promised it, especially not using the Model 3 as a starting point. It's quite long. It is many posts in a long thread. There'll be a link in the show notes. It is worth your time reading through it and pointing out that, you know, even if you, you know, first of all, you've got to take $10,000. Maybe they should get some Vauxhall engineers on this. You've got to take $10,000 out of the base $35,990 Model 3 price of a car that already is stripped back as much as possible,
yeah,
and optimized for building but not repairing, optimized for cost in just about every single possible way. It's going to be an interesting one. Definitely have a read. I mean, it goes, I've just scrolled down, I've got to 14, 15 posts in the thread. It should probably be a much longer article somewhere else, but it's a very interesting skeleton idea about just talking about just some of the costs that go into vehicles, especially EVs, and how most of it's battery.
Yeah, what we were talking about earlier about so much nonsense being put out there, I look forward to all the people who said how fantastic this was going to be and how easy it was going to be for Tesla to do, read this and then put out correction on all their pontificating and over. Nonsense.
This is not even worth you saying this. Don't even go there. But it's been a fact for decades. There's one of the reasons why stuff like B segment cars just don't really exist anymore is because you can use the same amount of materials, the same technology in a much bigger vehicle, charge more money for it, and you've instantly got more or some profit, which you didn't have before. And this, I think, explains it quite nicely.
Yep.
I think the image looks like a heavily doctored Toyota Corolla.
Yes, it does, actually. Okay, points of interest now, thankfully.
Yes.
We are getting away from the news. And we're going to start with a lunchtime read from Classic and Sports Car. And this one is titled Motoring Art, Erich Stranger. And this is a bunch of designs from the graphic designer between 1951 and 88 to do with Porsche's history. He was born in Stuttgart and he incorporates, like I say, graphic design, but also photography in the images that he produced, and they are just lovely.
I love this kind of poster art, some of them with that more screen print style. I just really love poster art, and these are right up my street, and I think they're great. Really cool.
Yep. So do click the link in the show notes to have a look yourself and read behind his story and how what he did. It's great.
List of the week this week. I don't really know what to say. Other than, could you all get back from your Easter holidays and write some flipping listicles, please?
Yeah, the first thing is, sorry, this is the best we could do.
It is, yes. There was one other that was proposed that was in here. There was, and other people chimed in with some other stuff, which were great articles, but we didn't really have time for them this week, so I might get it next week. They've been added to the triage. But yeah, this was like the best we could come up with.
And it's also topical. We've basically done
it's
it.
It's topical
for the
in that it
almost
was,
pun.
It's almost a pun. It's the best and worst eclipses. Mitsubishi eclipses. I'm so sorry.
I'm going to pick the 1989 Eclipse GS Turbo.
Yes, that's the one. Yes. There are only seven, by the way.
Yeah. This is how much of a barrel we have been scraping. We're not proud.
That scratching noise in the background is definitely us trying to find out if there's a false floor in the barrel. But yeah, the Mark 1's definitely, in my mind, is definitely the best looking one. It's, yeah. Back when Mitsubishi made really cool and interesting cars. Yeah. Yeah, have a look at the list. There you go. There's 3 minutes out of your day.
If that long.
Yeah.
Okay. And finally, we do like to end on something a little bit odd and fun. And this is to do with the car that is in The Muppets Most Wanted from 2014. And there's the story behind it, and there's also a video showing some outtakes, and also like diagrams showing how the actor actually managed to fit in.
This was me that put this one in, because it was either this or reflective registration plates, everyone. And frankly, I prefer the Muppets to reflective registration plates. Sam, the American Eagle, is in Europe, and they are playing to every European trope about tiny cars possible going. Before we go on to that, though, I just want you to admire the green BMW E28 5 Series on standard wheel trims that's in the background of the first picture. It is
That's what
perfection.
I'm doing right now.
We had a sort of set, the sort of equivalent blue to that E28 on wheel trims. It's genius. It's this little made up tiny car called Le Maximum, which is the detective's car, and just how they did it as a real thing. It's not CGI. It is a real car which had two full size people and a Muppet being controlled from within it. It is absolutely brilliant. Have a look. Have a read. It's just a little bit of fun, and I think it's really cool. I think it's.
I'm reminded of that British chap who went across the Mojave Desert in that ridiculous toy jeep.
Toy jeep, exactly. It's not dissimilar to that, and I think it's based on a similar type of chassis. I keep waiting for him to post more videos of what he's up to now. I really hope it's something cool and it's going well. This is great, and it's made me realize that I haven't seen Muppets Most Wanted, and I really should.
Okay, I think that just about rounds us out this week.
It does, yes. I don't think there's any parish notes.
No.
No, nothing special. Okay. So, folks, don't forget that between now and next week, you can give us any feedback and share your thoughts with the show at Motoring Podcast on Twitter and Instagram, on Facebook, and on the contact page of motoringpodcast.com, the hub of all our activities. Remember, you can support us via Patreon, and please leave a review and rating on Apple Podcasts or YouTube or however your podcast app lets you do such a thing. Andrew, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Best way to get in touch with me is if you search for Crack Windscreen on Twitter or Mastodon, you'll find me there. I'm also on LinkedIn under my proper name.
Alternatively, you can go along and knock on the rock that's across the front of his cave this week.
Yeah, I might not answer though. So, Alan, if people want to discuss more Muppet movies with you personally, what's the best way for them to do that?
Best way is probably Twitter or Blue Sky, where I'm at AJP Bradley. That's B-R-A-D-L-E-Y. We will be back soon. But until then, I've been Alan Bradley.
I've been Andrew Clues.
And safe motoring.